You know, every time I speak, I want the truth to come out. You know what I'm saying? Every time I speak, I want to shiver. You know, I don't want them to be like, they know what I'm going to say because it's polite. They know what I'm going to say. And even if I get in trouble, you know what I'm saying? Ain't that what we're supposed to do? I'm not saying I'm going to rule the world or I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world.
Truth seekers, please understand, Mental Dialogue is much more than just a talk show. Each and every Saturday, we communicate with you for two reasons, to dialogue and connect. On the dialogue side, we cater to you intellectual outcasts who feel you have no place for honest discourse on race, sex, culture, and African-American business. On the connect side, we've created a community where you can connect with experts specifically in finance, whether personal or business, and mental health, whether it's trauma or to optimize performance, along with all the other skill sets from other MD community members. Our mission was to create a virtual nationwide neighborhood where African Americans learn to trade ideas, goods and services through social media, meetup, and this podcast. To become a neighbor of the Mental Dialogue Community Club, please visit us at mentaldialogue.com. We are better with you than we are without you. We can be neighbors even though we don't live next to each other. Hashtag raise the culture.
I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates, and welcome to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. If you're a longtime listener, you know this is, in a sense, our new intro. Got a couple amazing guests as we are still pushing the envelope on the questions America's afraid to ask in the mainstream media. One returning guest, actually been a co-host of the show. He's played many roles on the show, so glad to have Dr. Sanjata back on the show. Thank you for being with us. If you will, say hello to the intellectual outcast out there listening and give them a little bit of your background before we let the cat out the bag on this morning's discussion question. Glad to have you with us, Dr. Sanjata.
Glad to be here, Montoya. Thanks again for the warm welcome and the consistent invite and allowing me to share space with you here on your platform, and good morning or good day to wherever you are, all the Mental Dialogue community members. My name is Dr. Sanjata. I am a systems thinker, an anti-oppression educator and organizer, and a businessman. I have a business where I consult people on communication, conflict resolution, and collaborative culture creation. And to sum it all up, there's more, but sum it all up, I love people, and I'm here always thinking about how I can use my gifts to serve people.
Love to have you black on the show, as I like to say. I got a first-time guest, member of the Mental Dialogue Community Club, Langston Thomas. Thank you for being with us, if you will. Brother, I would love for you to say hello to the intellectual outcasts out there listening. Hello to Dr. Sanjata. And if you will, give a bit of your background. Again, glad to have you as a part of our community club. You were able to attend the Mental Dialogue Live experience, but we'll talk about that here briefly. Tell them about yourself first before we talk about the experience last night. Thanks for being with us, Langston.
Yes, thanks for having me. Good morning, everyone. My name is Langston Thomas. I'm a political science PhD student at Georgia State University. And I'm also the founder of a nonprofit organization called Democratic Systems, Inc. We work to improve societal outcomes for vulnerable communities through principled, strategic, and collaborative action. I'm really interested in the concept of democracy, structural inequity in democracies around the world, and how different stakeholders in democracies can come together to build real solutions that address the roots of inequity and improve societal outcomes. I've really enjoyed my experience with Montoya and the Mental Dialogue community, so I really appreciate the opportunity to come on and engage in this conversation with y'all today.
No, absolutely, and it's an interesting conversation. If you are a first-time listener, I go by Black Socrates, consider myself, if you will, somewhat of a philosopher, and so we like to take the Socratic methods to these hard conversations on race, sex, and culture, and so we always try to put the show, for the most part, in the form of a question. We deviate every now and then, but for the most part, we do a discussion question, and this morning's discussion question is the system broken or working by design? Is the system broken or working by design? So I always try to start the show the same way. So Langston, this will be your first time, but pretty easy and quick the way we start the show. So I'll start with Dr. Shindada. You've done this before. And so, you know, I always love to ask, when you finally saw how I worded this show, because we know we were trying to put the show together a little while black, as I like to say. But with that said, you didn't necessarily know how I would word the discussion question. So when you heard it worded that particular way, can you recall what popped in your head when you saw me promote the show with that question?
I'll say I appreciated it, you know, because I think a lot of people have thought about that. A lot of people have come into that knowledge, like in the last, I would say, 7-8 years, I feel like more and more people have been talking about systems and really looking at things from a systemic level. So that's been like really cool to see. And yeah, a lot of people say that the system's broken, it's broken. I've heard that like 10, 15 years. So it's really cool now to see people interrogating and scrutinizing systems. So I appreciated you setting it up like that.
Sounds good. Langston, the first time on the show, and I said, hey, man, can you come knock out this interesting conversation we're about to have? And I don't know if you recall when I called you and said, hey, I think I called you and said, here's the name of the show. I think I had the name of the show when I called you. I may not. But whether I called you and said it for the first time or you actually saw the promotion, just the initial thought, not a deeper thought, just the initial thought into is the system broken or working by design? What popped in your head with the opportunity to come on this show and discuss this morning?
Yeah, what popped in my head was, ooh, I like that question because that's my bread. That's my bread and butter. That's what I study. It's what I'm interested in. It's what I love talking about. And to Dr. Sanjata's point, I think a lot of folks have been engaged in this awakening, realizing how the system is failing in different ways, but you know, from different perspectives and level of knowledge. So I was excited to come and engage in what we mean by is the system broken or working as it should and kind of digging into those details.
Nah, love it. And the crazy part, I'm just going to let the cat out of the bag, as good as that question sounds today, because it seems so beautiful. It's like a perfectly worded question for this morning's discussion question. Man, I had all kind of other ways I was trying to say this exact same way, and it was just way too long. I kept calling different members and calling people saying, I can't get it worded right. And so when I got it, I was like, how did I not think of this in the beginning? Because it's pretty much a question, like y'all said, that we've been kind of playing around with, and some people still contend that, quote, unquote, the system is broken, and others say, no, it's working just like it's designed. So obviously there are different viewpoints, and we're going to dig into that, if you will, a lot deeper. I would like to highlight this before we go to our initial break, and Dr. Sanjata, you can kind of build on this. Obviously, when we say the word the system, people may have something in mind, and the reality is there are so many various systems and systems inside of systems, if you will. And so you can actually break down, if you will, even individual issues from a systemic standpoint quite often, if you will. And so if you could just highlight the myriad of how there are an abundance of systems versus even just kind of sitting it as a entity where we say, quote unquote, like we say, they are the system. That's so generalized that sometimes – you know what I mean? That it's kind of it's disingenuous to kind of just put it out there as this entity because it's unfair to leave it like that. So
yeah.
If you can kind of just give a quick breakdown, we've got about a minute and a half before the first break, but just give me some breakdown of that just so that we're fair for today's conversation.
Yeah. It's really important for folks to kind of like expand their understanding in that way and understand that we live in a world, a universe of systems and subsystems. And they're all interconnected and interrelated in some way. And, you know, so when we talk about our social systems, you know, we're talking about human-made systems because we have our natural systems like the universe, galaxies, solar systems, Earth, their ecosystem, humans, other animals. Those are all natural systems, right? But then we have systems that humans have created, like our social systems and our industrial systems. So when folks say the system is broken, typically they're talking about, like, the way our society works and inclusive of that's what be our social systems. But within in those social systems, there's several. There's capitalism, there's patriarchy, there's religion, There's ownership. There's systemic racism. These are all systems. There's the criminal justice system. There's so many various systems that are at play, and they're all connected in some way. And so, yeah, I think that's a cool way to kind of set the stage for where we're going.
Nah, necessary, very necessary. So we just wanted to be, if you will, a little clearer than just a generic the system out there so that people understand.
Yeah.
Like Dr. Sujata just pointed out, there's variance of how they're all interconnected and what, in a sense, we are talking about as we go into this morning's discussion question. Is the system broken or working by design? We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think. Are you looking for a deep, meaningful relationship that eventually leads to marriage, but tired of swiping left on dating apps, tired of being ghosted, and tired of online relationship coaches without relationships themselves? Well, psychotherapist Monique Knight has the recipe to help you find your perfect match, and she brings you the Secret Sauce Relationship Bootcamp. With support from trained couples counselors, marriage and family therapists, this course will empower you to build meaningful relationships. This 8-week bootcamp offers a structured journey for singles to meet and interact as our team of experts guides you through topics like effective communication, conflict management, and intimacy. Registration is now open for the second bootcamp after the first one sold out in less than 2 weeks. The next bootcamp starts on April 1st. Register at comprehensivefamilycare.org/SSB or call 404-585-7533. Again, that is 404-585-7533 for details. Remember, love is not just a matter of chance, it's a skill that can be developed.
Common these days to hear people say that the system is broken, or some iteration of that statement when discussing the various problems that we face socially as global citizens. Whether it's healthcare, criminal justice, politics, environmental, or education, the sentiment seems to consistently be that the system is broken. But what is the system that so many people are referencing? How does it work, and why is it in a constant state of disarray? This track will answer these questions by helping you gain a deeper understanding of how systems work. It will explain how and why our social systems are set up the way they are, and in later tracks, I'll share how some people and businesses are already taking steps to redesign them. What is a system? Intuitively, we all understand systems, and we know that something is wrong with our current social systems. However, the idea that the system is broken is misguided. In reality, our social systems are working exactly the way they were designed to work.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, is the system broken or working by design? As you hear a cut from our special guest, Dr. Sujata's Theory of Indivisibility audio album, if you will, and we'll be sharing cuts from that actual album. So if you will, Dr. Sujata, we also have special guest Langston Thomas on with us as well. But if you will, Dr. Sujata, highlight the idea behind that album as I play a shortcut, just again kind of breaking down systems and the idea that you're, you know, taking your doctorate and bringing it to the public to better understand. But if you will, highlight that album, what the purpose of the album is, if you will, and then we'll just kind of get into this morning's discussion. But go ahead, brother.
Absolutely. First, I want to say what's up, Langston. I didn't get a chance to say hello, and it's good to be on here with you. I know that we met in person at an event that Montoya held a few months ago. So I just wanted to say what's up, and it's nice to be on with you this morning.
Appreciate that. Good morning. Good to hear you.
So, Montoya, I appreciate you, bringing this album, and sharing it with your community, with the Mental Dialogue community. It's something that I've been working on for a lot of years, and, it comes from basically, I started out early 20s, like really pained by what I was seeing. I'm from West Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So I grew up in inner city, all the stereotypical, experiences of a young person growing up in the inner city with the drugs, the violence, the guns, the murders, the incarcerations, the family and friends. And, I always say for me and my peers that made it out, I feel like we're like lucky. I felt like growing up in inner city environments, we were like endangered species, and felt those of us who made it out without going to jail or being killed, like, were very fortunate. And I'm one of the fortunate ones. And I feel like, you know, in my early 20s, when I went away to undergrad, my mind began to expand, and I began to question things that were once normal to me growing up in the inner city. I began to see them through a different lens, and it began to really pain me and ache me. And I started like asking questions like, why is the world this way, et cetera. And that, you know, why are we so divided as people? And why is there so much violence, so much hopelessness, et cetera. So I literally have been on a journey my entire adult life, asking that question and being pulled by that question. And it's taken me to a lot of places, and I've learned a lot of things being pulled by that question. But one of those places was through my doctoral studies, I learned about a concept called systems thinking. Had never heard of it prior to then. And this is back in 2009 when I first heard the term systems thinking. And I took a class called Thinking in Systems. And when I took that class, it was like night became day. It was like all of a sudden I had answers to questions that had been paining me for years. Now, all of a sudden, I had language, and I had a set of tools, a set of visual and verbal tools to help me to see why, to see what the underlying root causes are for so many of the social ills that have plagued people who grew up in situations like me and beyond, really all people in our planet. And ultimately, that led to me wanting to share this knowledge that I was gaining with others. And it led to me creating what I call my theory of indivisibility. And through that, I've put out an infographic and other, you know, a podcast and other, you know, forms of content. And one of the more recent forms of content is the audio album from which you played that cut from, where it's just me, you know, talking over hip hop beats for 9 tracks, breaking down systems thinking and how it applies to how I've seen our social systems and the problems, you know, the violence, the isms, the sexism, the racism, you know, the classism, the underlying root causes of these things, how we can become aware of it and become aware that, you know, these systems were created by other humans. And so hopefully that it will empower other people the way it's empowered me to believe that if humans created these systems thousands of years ago, then we have just as much power and agency in the present to create new systems or to live into systems that don't continue to perpetuate the harm, the oppression, and divisiveness that are, you know, so prevalent based on the way that our current dominant systems were designed.
Amazing breakdown, and as I highlight, we will continue to play various cuts from, again, the theory of indivisibility audio album. Matter of fact, let me do this because we are a 2-hour show. If you don't mind, Dr. Sanjata, how can somebody in the event that they're not able to, in a sense, they're on here live and listening live and are able to listen to the next hour, we'll highlight this again in the second hour, but if somebody wanted to get that actual album, tell them how to do that very briefly, and then we'll repeat that in the next hour as well.
Yes. DrSunjata.com. So like DR, my first name, the way my first name is spelled, Sunjata. S-U-N-D as in David, I-A-T-A.com. So drsunjata.com. If you go there, and you'll find it there.
Now, it sounds good. Again, y'all going to hear several cuts that we're going to break down thoroughly. Myself and Langston got another guest coming on in the second hour. We're going to have some amazing dialogue specifically from the theory of indivisibility. And then I want to make some of you that can't stay on have to go back and listen to this just to find out how to listen. So definitely wanted to highlight that. Langston, again, just kind of, I assume with your background, a lot of this sounds like music to your ears. Just, again, you're getting your doctorate. I would also say to a degree in a systems thought process as well, at least the way I heard it.
Yeah.
I may have that a little incorrect or whatever, but just anything that you heard in reference to maybe the album or what Dr. Sanjata is highlighting, even his path to getting here, what little I know of you, you're kind of in a similar space as far as the things that you want to attack. I don't necessarily know your background or what brought you here. So maybe you can highlight some of that and why you're doing the work you're doing as well as it relates to this morning's discussion.
Yeah, definitely. I was really interested in learning about Dr. Sanjata's background, and it is, of course, different than mine, but it resonates heavily. I was born in D.C., grew up in Maryland, and for the first 8 years of my life, my dad was in prison, and my mom and I lived in sort of a low-income suburb that was predominantly Black and Hispanic. I was none the wiser. I was living a good life. I would go visit my dad pretty much every weekend with my mom. And when I was in third grade, he actually got out of prison and came home. So life was pretty good. We were still in a low-income area, but I was at a pretty decent elementary school. But my world actually changed for the first time in fourth grade when my dad mysteriously passed away, turning my mom into a widow with two kids. So that flipped my world upside down. And then I was homeschooled for a stint, came back and finished fifth grade. And then my world flipped again when I moved from that, underserved Black Hispanic area to a more affluent white Jewish Asian area in Maryland for middle school and high school. And that was really my first introduction. I had some run-ins with the police before that, but that was my first introduction to racism and oppression from within a white institution and at different levels, from teachers, from classmates, from administrators, from parents of friends. And so that was really when, really that transition is when I began to question, well, why am I going through these things that are out of my control? No matter how hard I work, how talented I am, people who identify my skills and talent seem to be attacking me in different levels. And it wasn't until ninth grade I took a class called AP U.S. Government, and I first learned about the term structural inequality. And for the first time, like Dr. Sundrata was saying, that's when I first began to have the language to articulate what I was going through and what I was seeing in the world. I learned that, you know, it wasn't God or fate or chance that was creating these unfortunate situations that I or other people in my environment were going through, but instead there were these systems that have been intentionally built by other humans to benefit certain groups of people and cause harm to other groups of people. And so by the end of my time in high school, I became committed to the goal of understanding the roots of inequality and democracy and figuring out a way to create real change in my lifetime. And I continued to struggle with those questions in undergrad, working in the public and private sector, now in the PhD program. But yeah, I think the conversation about systems is very important. And I am excited to get deeper into different cuts of Dr. Sundrata's album, if you will, because there's some things that, you know, of course I agree with, but some things I, you know, from my perspective, I might not. So I'm excited to dig deeper into it. But that's a little bit about my background and how I sort of became obsessed with this idea of structural inequality and systems.
No, it makes sense. And that's what we do here at Mental Dialogue. We have open and honest dialogue. We don't have to agree. You and I had a personal conversation after one of the live experiences and says, hey, ultimately the community and platform is set up for us to challenge. So we welcome, you know, in a sense, the dialogue so that we can have, I would say that you ask enough of the right questions, maybe you get to the right answers. And the right answers may apply differently for you individually, but we can't get there if we're not freely having those conversations. So definitely feel free, to bring anything that you want to bring, to the table. What I hear, Dr. Sundrata, something that you're always highlighting, so you and him, in a sense, have very different backgrounds, yet the concern seems to be the same, and that's something that you're, when I listen to your album, that you continuously, in a sense, point out that these different experiences quite often seem to have similar outcomes, and that's what the way I gather from listening to your album, that's when you would highlight whether someone wants to recognize it or not, that's when it seems that a system may be at play, even though people come from different backgrounds and these similar outcomes seem to keep happening. Is that a fair thought that I took from the theory of indivisibility and hearing your background versus Langston? It seems to be that way currently as we're doing this show, if you will.
I want to make sure I understand that question. I'm a little fuzzy. So when you are you saying that basically, no matter our background, we're going to be impacted in some way by these various systems in a way that is harmful. And from based on what you gather is what I'm is what
okay,
I'm saying.
Okay, I don't know necessarily about the harmful part. I'm just highlighting, let me see if I'm trying to be, if I can be clear with the question. When it comes to the idea of even recognizing, in a sense, that we're involved or there is a system at play, something that I seem like you kept pointing out in the theory of indivisibility, that in a sense, one of the ways to be aware is when you have people take, in a sense, different paths, there's this similar outcome. And so it's kind of like at that moment, it's kind of a possibility of recognizing, hey, maybe there's something else at play than what I may think from my individual standpoint. I don't know if that's clarifying what I'm asking. I'm not offering whether harm's being offered. I'm just talking about the idea that there's, in a sense, a system at play and becoming aware of this system that's at play. I don't know if I'm clarifying. I hope I am.
Well, what I'll say is, based on how I'm understanding, is I would say yes would be the answer to your question. Because, yeah, it's all about just creating that awareness, you know, because another way that people like to say, who like to talk about systems and creating awareness is like, for the most part, it's the way that our lives are, the circumstances of, you know, and the outcomes, the consistent outcomes that people have faced, you know, for thousands of years now, up under these current dominant, what I call and others will say are power over social systems, or social systems rooted in power over dynamics, ideals, and beliefs, like power over ideals, dynamics, and beliefs, is that it's the water we swim in. So oftentimes, like the water we swim in, meaning just like fish, a fish doesn't know it's wet because they're in the ocean and they swim and that's their surroundings, and they don't have the perspective to necessarily understand that they're in water, it is wet. It's just, they're just living their lives. And for a lot of people, and I'll speak for myself, for me, for a large portion of my life, I didn't understand that I was moving in systems, that I was being impacted by systems. And I was also, you know, let's say, yeah, being impacted, influenced, indoctrinated, you know, et cetera, by systems that were rooted in power over, because it's the water we swim in. It's just normal. The way that my elders explained it to me and tried to teach me to navigate it was in a way where it was normalized. And once I gained a systems perspective, it was almost like being a fish that realized that I was wet, being a fish realizing that I'm swimming in the ocean, but also understanding that there's other environments outside of that ocean with different experiences that can be had. So that's what my whole vision and album and everything is all about, is just helping people mm-hmm. to be aware that we are swimming in systems and that we can take a different approach. It doesn't just have to, we don't have to just focus on navigating these systems. We can step out of them and walk in new ones.
Nah, fair enough and respected. And I don't think I think I'm gonna get, and now I'm thinking about it as I'm listening to you, and just for just a little piece of clarity, I was just highlighting that even you and Langston having completely different backgrounds, y'all kind of ended up in this same space wanting to deal with the same issues, even though your backgrounds were, and at least from what I could tell, are extremely varied, right? And I was just highlighting mm-hmm. that it almost seems like y'all got here because, one, y'all have the awareness despite mm-hmm. having a background where maybe you wouldn't come to the same conclusion of wanting to contend with, boom, one, creating this awareness, but obviously both of you are actively discussing the actions that it may take beyond just even being aware of, as the example you just gave, hey, I'm a fish and I am wet, right? So I hope I'm adding some clarity. I was just highlighting that y'all both seem to get, you know, have gotten to the same space, if that makes sense. Forgive me if I wasn't being clear with that, but go ahead. Just give me a quick thought on that, and then I'm gonna ask Langston something. Well, we're actually about to go to break, so just give me a thought on that, and we're gonna go to another break.
Yeah, I just want to acknowledge, like, you're absolutely right, and you know, I think, you know, I don't know what causes folks to get to this point in their journeys, you know, but I will acknowledge that, yeah, people get here with all different experiences. I know several people that have landed in this space of interrogating systems, wanting to live into and create new systems, or, you know, like just the systems analysis in general, you know, I'm not sure, you know, how, but yeah, absolutely. People can get here from all different backgrounds.
No, it makes sense. I see several callers out there. If y'all are wanting to jump in on the show, you do have to press 1 if you want to speak. If you're just listening via the phone, no problem. If you're online and want to get on the show, the number is 646-787-1691. Again, that's 646-787-1691. You do have to press 1 and let us know you want to speak. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
What happens when your customers call your business and you're too busy to answer or call them back in a timely manner? You lose that business. Shockingly, 61% of inbound calls go unanswered. But fear not, tchmedia.ai is here to change the game. We specialize in capturing, nurturing, and converting your prospects into loyal customers. With our state-of-the-art communication solutions, no interaction will be left behind. When you miss a call, we've got you covered with automatic, engaging texts that keep your prospects connected and eager to choose you over your competitors. Don't let potential customers slip away. Make the smart choice with tchmedia.ai and skyrocket your conversions today. tchmedia.ai is here to change the game.
Most people are event-oriented thinkers. They see the world as a messy collection of parts and events. They believe that each event has a cause, and if you want to solve a problem, find the cause and fix that. Applying this mindset to the systemic racism problem historically and presently in America, they see prejudiced and bigoted politicians and people of European descent as the cause of the problem. The solution, then, is to get those people to stop behaving so irresponsibly. Event-oriented thinkers believe that this can be done with laws stating what to do and not to do, marches, voting, protests, and emotional appeals to stop being racist and vote them out. When that solution fails, as it has for over 150 years since the abolition of slavery, most just throw their hands up and call it a hard problem, while others continue to do more of the same while hoping for and accepting incremental progress. This mindset is known as classic activism. Systems thinkers see the problem entirely differently. We see immense reinforcing feedback loops, aka positive feedback loops, that have incentivized, historically and presently, many people of European descent and politicians to exploit indigenous, African, and Latino American people for their own benefit and economic growth. This mode of behavior becomes unsustainable when balancing, aka negative, feedback loops finally start to push back, as statistics show that the wealth gap between people of European descent in America and non-European descended Americans is widening because of social and economic inequality in policing, education, healthcare, housing, and employment. Systems thinkers don't see misbehavior from prejudice and bigotry as the problem. Instead, we see the structure of our socioeconomic and political systems as both causing and rewarding that misbehavior. To solve the problem, system structure must be understood and changed so that feedback loops can be redesigned to cause and reward people for behaving in ways that foster social and economic equity and equality as a natural part of their everyday existence. This takes much more radical efforts than voting, protesting, and shaming people on social media for being racist.
Welcome back to the Bits of Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question is: the system broken or working by design? Special guest, Dr. Sujata, as well as Langston Thomas. Langston, before I go to the couple of, got a couple of callers here, before I go to them, I'm just curious. Again, you were saying, hey, I'm interested in digging into this album. So as you hear that cut, what thoughts come to mind? And then we're going to go to both of our callers, if you will, but definitely want to get your thoughts on hearing an additional portion of The Theory of Indivisibility, Dr. Sanjata's audio album. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, I really liked that cut. The idea of classic activism and how it's been continuously utilized without producing different results, and how systems thinkers see the drawbacks of trying to utilize those same mechanisms for change, that I 1,000%, you know, identify that with that, and that resonates. I appreciate Dr. Sanjata also highlighting how many folks have concluded that certain white folks, certain Europeans, certain politicians who are benefiting from the system and are replicating sort of Eurocentric ideas, how we've identified those different elements as the problem. On the solution piece, I think there are different ways to address that. Like Dr. Sanjata said, some people say we just got to vote them out, shame them, and get the right people in. Other folks have different perspectives on what the solution is, but like Dr. Sanjata said, systems thinkers move beyond classic activism to think of other ways to create new feedback loops, new positive feedback loops that reward and produce positive behaviors rather than the system that rewards and encourages negative behavior. So that was a wonderful cut. It really resonates, and I identify with that mindset, that framework of using systems thinking to move beyond these typical ways of fighting for change that historically have not worked.
Fair enough. Definitely wanted to let Dr. Sanjata hear somebody's response again to his work. Let's get to these callers because they may want to bring in something from the last segment or even address this as well. I think this may be Brother Pianchi. He calls different numbers, so I get lost now. Is this Brother Pianchi? I hope I got this right.
Yeah, this is the right number I've had for ages.
Yeah. You just call me from another number, so I get it mixed up sometimes. So that's my bad on that. But, yeah, this is our longtime supporter and caller, Brother Pianchi, who always brings us an amazing 3 cents. If you're a first-time listener, we say call on here and give us your 3 cents. So if you will, Brother Pianchi, what you got for us this morning? Thank you for calling in.
Well, I hear him using the word system and something apparently that's entrenched, but I don't hear any examples. I don't see any examples of what it is that you're talking about. How would this system, what would you describe the procedure to become a NFL, NBA player? Programs, combines, quote-unquote, camps, quote-unquote. So is that what you're talking about, that there's a certain subscribed way to become an NFL, NBA, or Major League Baseball player? That there is, quote-unquote, a system. How about becoming an astronaut? So give us some examples of what you're talking about, real live examples, because that word system is used in a general practicality. We need some examples. At least I do.
Fair enough, Dr. Sanjata. Any thoughts? Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, we're going to get into a specific example at the top of the hour, just to give you a heads up, Brother Pianchi, so that it definitely helps walk people through it. But I'll go ahead and let Dr. Sanjata respond to some of what you said before we go to another caller. But again, and call back in, Brother Pianchi, if you need to, if you will. But go ahead, Dr. Sanjata, just kind of help him out. Say, hey, I need something a little more concrete than, in a sense, talking about this in theory or in a general way. Your thoughts before we go to the next caller.
Yeah, I appreciate the question, Brother Pianchi. And, one of the things that I'd like to do to help people orient themselves to this framework that we're talking about, this context for systems, because, yeah, the English language, we have so many multiple meaning words. It can be confusing. So systems thinking, or systems in this context, the best way to orient everyone to the context that we're talking about is, if you think about, our natural world and what are called natural systems, starting with the universe. And if you could think about the fact that within the universe are systems. So the universe is a system. Let's call it the observable universe. As a system as a whole, within that is the galaxies. Within the galaxies are solar systems. Within our solar system is Earth. Within the Earth is the ecosystem that we all live within. And then within that ecosystem is humans and other animals. So those are natural systems. So to orient you to the way that I'm talking about systems, think of it like that. You know, we live in a world of natural systems that and subsystems that all sit inside of each other, and they're all interconnected and interrelated. So now that we're at humans, those are all natural systems. I talked about it all the way down. If you think about it, like down, let's say a smaller circle where there's humans. Well, humans are systems, and think about the human body. The human body has several systems. We have our skeletal system, our endocrine system, our digestive system, right, et cetera. We have several systems within our body. So we're systems, and we also have systems within us that are all interconnected and interrelated that help us live, that sustain our lives. Again, the example of natural systems and subsystems. But beyond that, humans also create systems. We create social systems like language, like cities, laws, communities, our economics, our politics, our religions, concepts like race, gender. Those are all examples of human-made social systems. Then you have human-made industrial systems like buildings, railroads, you know, trains, roads, et cetera. Those are industrial systems that are human-made systems. So I hope that helps people kind of orient your mind to what we're talking about when we talk about systems and systems thinking in this context. It's just understanding the world as a non-ending series of systems and subsystems. So systems thinking is about being aware of those systems and their interconnections and how they're all interrelated. And by understanding that, we can get to understanding the root causes of the root causes of things in general. But in this context, social systems is what we're talking about. So by understanding them as systems, then we can talk about how to either design or create systems that don't have a lot of the issues that we're currently dealing with.
And so I will highlight again, so myself also needing concrete examples. Again, at the top of the hour, we will take one example and dive through it and hear, in a sense, how systems thinking applies to common issues that we have within our community. He just, in a sense, gave the big breakdown of what Dr. Sunjata, what he means when he's talking about systems and how everything's interconnected. Let's go to this next caller, 678, last 3097. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your 3 cents on this morning's discussion. 097, you're live on the air. 097, going once, going twice. So I see this number, so there's somebody that definitely usually gets on, so I don't know if they y'all can still hear me, right? I'm just making sure.
Yes, I can still
okay,
hear
you. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right, cool. All right, when I hear that silence, sometimes I will be wondering if I got knocked offline or not. All right, 678-097, you will need to come off the one and back on the one if you're actually trying to get in. If you're just listening, not a problem. But now,
if there's
again,
time,
Montoya,
can I speak to the last question?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, so I think about systems a little bit differently. I forget the name of the gentleman who asked the question, but I like to think of – yes. So I like to think of systems in terms of institutions. I sort of interchange the two, even though in Dr. Sunjata's work, those might be two completely different things. But I'll still use the word systems. But I like to think of systems or institutions as the entities that shape how people in society perceive things and how they behave. And so there are sort of three categories of systems or institutions that I think about, political systems, economic systems, and social systems. And again, these three categories of systems shape how people in a society perceive and how they behave. And so going back to the example of the sports, which the gentleman brought up, I think if someone wants to become a professional basketball player or football player, and they know that from youth, there are certain experiences that they have to have within our political, social, and economic system for them to go down that path. And I think we see some of those tropes in the trends that are athletes kind of follow, and I'm not going to go too deep into this, but in my mind, education is a political topic, right? Receiving the information you need, going through the education system, our tax dollars pay for public education. So in my mind, education falls within our political system. Now, if someone is on the sort of athletic track, as opposed to someone who's a typical student, their experience and our educational institutions will be different. I don't know if you all watch football, but I went to high school with Trayvon Diggs. I think he's on the Ravens now or something. I don't follow sports really. But folks who are deemed to be athletes from early on and have an athletic sort of track, they might put more emphasis on going to combines and going to practice and doing things with the coach than on attending classes, getting good grades, and developing some of those other skills that would be beneficial outside of the realm of sports, right? And that has implications for the circles that they're in, what things they learn about their people, especially if we're talking about Black athletes going through the education system. That can influence what they learn about their people, if they ever learn about these systems and the struggles that these systems put on different communities around the world. And to sort of just end this train of thought, we have many athletes today that are different from the athletes in the past, different from the Jackie Robinsons and the Muhammad Ali's. We have a lot of athletes today who have a lot of wealth, a lot of resources, but are disconnected from the struggles of our people. And I think that is in part a result of how our systems train people on that athletic track to function as a pawn in this system, you know, that's destructive and oppressive, rather than embracing who they are, where they come from, and finding ways to build more
makes sense.
Equitable
systems. Let me jump in. I need to get to this break, but I was trying to let you finish out your thought. Let me jump to this break, but thank you for those
Appreciate that. I'll let
Dr. Sajada kind of respond and give his thoughts on it as well. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think. Are you looking for a deep, meaningful relationship that eventually leads to marriage, but tired of swiping left on dating apps? Tired of being ghosted and tired of online relationship coaches without relationships themselves? A psychotherapist, Monique Knight, has the recipe to help you find your perfect match, and she brings you the Secret Sauce Relationship Bootcamp. With support from trained couples counselors, marriage and family therapists, this course will empower you to build meaningful relationships. This 8-week bootcamp offers a structured journey for singles to meet and interact as our team of experts guides you through topics like effective communication, conflict management, and intimacy. Registration is now open for the second boot camp after the first one sold out in less than 2 weeks. The next boot camp starts on April 1st. Register at comprehensivefamilycare.org/SSB or call 404-585-7533. Again, that is 404-585-7533 for details. Remember, love is not just a matter of chance, it's a skill that can be developed.
From the systems perspective, the human actor is a part of the feedback process, not standing apart from it. This represents a profound shift in awareness. It allows us to see that we are continually both influenced by and influencing our reality. It is the shift in awareness so ardently advocated by ecologists and their cries that we see ourselves as part of nature, not separate from nature. When I think deeply about feedback loop processes and the example of the process of filling a glass of water and how the structure of the glass, i.e. its shape and size, influences every other behavior in the steps taken to fill it, I think about what the implications could be for poverty, gun violence, school dropouts, homelessness, and other issues that plague society if instead of blaming people as individuals for finding themselves in those situations, we chose to examine the entire process that led to them being in the situation, and the environment, or the glass or cup, that they are trying to make decisions to survive in. I realize that this is hard to accept because it feels like we are absolving people from taking personal responsibility for their choices and actions. However, if you think back to the Slinky example in Track 2, and allow yourself to imagine if our social, economic, and political systems were designed in a completely different way, then certain choices either wouldn't have to be made or they wouldn't have the same consequences.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, is the system broken or working by design? Special guest, Dr. Sanjata, as well as Langston Thomas. Love the example you just gave, Langston, and I want to challenge both of you as systems thinkers as we let's use Brother Piyaki's example of, in a sense, kind of how it made you get into the athlete track versus the, in a sense, the academic track under our public education system. And, you know, again, love how you brought up, as we say, and I've said this in the past as well, but again, the challenge just for us to walk through it. So we say, hey, the athletes of the past, the Muhammad Ali's, the Jackie Robinson's, and now, in a sense, there's a path where there seems to be, if you will, this idea of less concerned about our community from some of our, maybe say some of our wealthier or more known athletes, if you will. And I acknowledge that that distinction or change has happened. I would even acknowledge that some people even pinpoint it at the, if you will, the evolution of Michael Jordan in the NBA and in a sense of the amount of wealth that he was able to gain from outside the sport with the advent of the Jordan shoes, if you will, and becoming, in a sense, the model for what we see today where athletes are going in looking for some type of deal to pay them significant amounts of money outside of just being great at their athletic career. So some people kind of point to that period, and some even highlight Michael Jordan being asked that question years ago about which candidate he endorsed, and he said, hey, Republicans buy shoes too, just to kind of highlight I don't want to get political because it may affect, in a sense, my business outside of the NBA. So I'm kind of being very particular, jumping in on that, and here's my challenge. My challenge is we might suggest that, as Langston did, that athletes are, in a sense, pushed in that direction, quote-unquote, from a system standpoint. I would highlight that that was just the natural evolution of business, in a sense, saying, hey, if you know any of the story of Nike and Michael Jordan, they end up making way more money than they ever expected with all of their business acumen with the shoe being released. And it just, people saying, whoa, we didn't know we could do this. I don't know that those people were concerned that the athletes that followed Michael Jordan were political or not. The marketplace, which is us, the people, drove whether he chose to get political or not. I hope I'm making sense here, but Dr. Sanjata, jump in where you may. It's just the way that I would want to challenge the overall thought that the system has our athletes this way. I think it played out via marketplace. Again, just a thought. Your thoughts, brother.
Yeah. To me, like what you're saying the marketplace, the system, like that's all in the same. You know, this is where I wish we had more language in our English language to like explain these things, because it's confusing. I will admit, you know, it takes really spending some time with this stuff to really grasp it to the degree that I'm talking about it. I can't even do it justice now the way that the album, that's why I created the album, because it breaks it down way better than the little piecemeal bite-sized pieces that I'm giving you all. But what I will say, based on everything you just said, Montoya, you know, that's based on the evolution of our capitalist system, of our economic system, let's say dominant economic system, which is capitalism. That's just how it evolved. And what my work is geared towards is helping people to understand that, again, that's the water we swim in. But there's some land over there that's above the water where they're doing things completely different. And the rules or the norms within that place, that's not the ocean or not the water, are completely different. So different choices, you know, and decisions would be, you know, required or can get made that can't get made or wouldn't get made within our current context. So another way that I like to talk about systems thinking that I think a lot of people may be able to relate to is like, don't hate the player, hate the game. And I feel like what you're talking about and where a lot of people go is like, you basically talking about, even the example you gave of like players in the 60s and everything like that, is like, they're just players. Those are people who are playing within the way the game is designed. And different people and actors within the way the game is designed are going to make different decisions, but they're still going to be within the confines of the way the game is designed, within the confines of the rules of the current game. My whole thing
can I ask a question right there just for clarity? And I'm pretty sure Langston wants to jump in as well. My question is, so in using my example, and again, I'm seriously asking for clarity here. So using the example of the players in the 60s versus now, they act I think even Langston is saying this, they acted very differently and were aiming for different outcomes. So you got a Michael saying, hey, I don't want to get too political because, I'm not saying this is exactly what he did personally. I'm just kind of saying how it's looked at. So I'm acting a little different, not going to get too political and take a side per se because it's going to mess with, in a sense, my marketing over here. Whereas the athletes prior to that, to Langston's point, is they would sacrifice some of that for the quote-unquote good of the community. I'm not talking about a right or wrong, but when you said they're just in a system – I think those two different approaches creates different outcomes. So that's hard. It's hard for me to understand when you say they are just players, because I don't know that the system wanted the athletes to do what they did in the past, or if they won't even wanted Michael to do what he did. So I'm trying to understand how you say they're just players when I see different actions and different outcomes. I think maybe I'm wrong about that, but help me understand.
You're absolutely right. But what I'm trying to get you to understand is we're talking about what's going on in the ocean, and you're absolutely right. We're talking about what fish are doing in the ocean, and I'm saying you're right. There's nothing else to be said from that context. I'm just saying you're right about that.
Langston, any thoughts on kind of how I'm digging into this before we get to the top of our case study, if you will? We're going to go into a specific example and just to kind of see how this different thinking applies to some of our issues. But jump in. I'm pretty sure you got some thoughts on just kind of even where I went to challenge the concept of some of what I'm hearing today. But go ahead, brother.
Yeah. So your initial point was that Michael Jordan's relationship with Nike and the decision to not be political to sell shoes was sort of a natural development in our economic system. Was that the point you were making?
Just to be clear for anybody out there listening, I'm not talking about Michael in particular. I'm just highlighting that's something that's
right.
Kind of brought to the – not. I'm just saying it to everyone else. I know you get it. I just want to make sure that nobody because sometimes when we have these conversations, they think that I have an opinion about Michael. I'm just using it as a
right.
pinpoint. I want to clear that for the audience, but go ahead and respond. Sorry about that, brother.
Right, and I think I agree. And I just recently read this book called The Discourse on the Origin of Inequality. It's by some political theorist, Rousseau. But it talks about how we don't really know the origins of humanity. So the only thing we really know about like what's natural for humans is that we change, is that things are variable, things are always evolving. And he talks about how we can kind of evolve for good or we can evolve for evil. But no matter what, we're evolving, things are changing. And like Dr. Sanjata's clip mentioned, we are a part of these systems, but as human actors with consciousness, we are always being influenced by and influencing the system, right? So change is always occurring, and we have some agency in that. But also there's opportunities for things that are unexpected to arise. That's the nature of evolution. So I agree with your point that Michael, in just pinpointing the example, and I'm saying we have thoughts about Michael, but that development in Michael is arguably natural, a natural development from our capitalist system. One could argue that the development of capitalism is a natural human development. But to Dr. Sanjata's point, it's not the only natural human development. We are infinitely naturally variable. So there are other economic systems other than capitalism that are not evil, right? Because I will say that capitalism is evil. So I agree with your point, but I don't think it conflicts with Dr. Sanjata's point of the fact that all of these things, whether good or bad, are natural developments because humans are natural. It's just, are we going to allow ourselves and our communities to naturally evolve towards evil, or are we going to uptake the agency that we have and do what we can to stop those destructive feedback loops and create positive ones, looking to the land as opposed to just being in the ocean, as Dr. Sanjata was saying? But those are just some of my thoughts.
No, fair enough. It's perfect timing. We're at the top of the hour. Again, for the callers out there, you can press one if you want to get in. Definitely looking forward to bringing on my next guest to kind of add to it. I'm calling this a case study in which we're going to go into a specific example, and hopefully as we dialogue between all of us, Dr. Sanjata and again, Langston kind of understands systems thinking as well. And so hopefully y'all are here through our real life example, maybe the various ways that this thinking can apply to a real life issue. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
Babe, where did you get that hat and t-shirt? I like that.
Oh, I got this at moneymotivation.com. It's fresh, right?
Yes, and I love the message on it, too. You are the hustle, huh?
That's what the shirt says. I am the hustle. They embody the entrepreneurial spirit, and what I like the most, it's more than a brand. It's a lifestyle for those who want to put in the work and expect to have the finer things in life. I also follow them on Instagram. Check this post out.
If you believe money is the root of all evil, you're using it wrong?
Or how about this one? Excuses made $0 an hour.
I like those. What's their IG?
At moneymotivation.co.
But do they have any ladies gear?
Yes, you're going to love the clothing line they got for the ladies. Matter of fact, pull up their website, moneymotivation.com, and I'm going to get you a few things so we can both look like money.
Everywhere I go, go, and everywhere I be, I don't even talk, talk, they still know it's me. Cause I look like money, smell like money, talk like money, even walk like money.
Shout out to our longtime sponsors, Money Motivation. Langston, you was at the live experience last night, the Mental Dialogue Live Experiences, which is where we do this, what we do every Saturday here on Blog Talk Radio. We do it live and in person, but a lot more fun, if you will. But if you will, Langston, did you like my drip last night, my I Am the Hustle shirt and my black and red hat that come from Motor Money Motivation? Got to shout them out. So I hope you liked my drip last night. And real quick.
Yeah.
They've been sponsoring us for a long time. So, yeah, if you like that, just know moneymotivation.com is where you get that from. And real quick, man, how did you like last night? And then we're going to get into what I call a case study just to help people grasp, get a grip around this systems thinking and what you guys are good at doing and sharing it with the rest of us. But any thoughts about last night real quick before I share this piece?
Yeah, you was looking good last night. You had the drip on you. So, yeah, okay, good to know where to get some stuff. And I had fun at the live experience last night. I had a long week, but it was nice to come in and play some spades with some beautiful black folk and then get into the live experience. Reading an excerpt from your book, which is always all the excerpts I've read, I've enjoyed very much, having great conversation. So, I appreciated the live experience last night, and I look forward to the next one.
Nah, perfectly. You set me up perfect. I didn't even know you was going to say that. We're about to hear another excerpt from my book. I'm not going to read the whole commentary, but I want to get another brother, one of my great friends in here, Scott Waters, if you will. Say hello to the intellectual outcasts as we're adding you to this conversation. This brother has a background in law enforcement, and I'm going to keep this thing moving because I want to have a full perspective. And the whole idea for everybody listening, today's discussion question is the system broken or working by design? And I'm assuming some of you, this is your first time hearing system used in the way that Dr. Sanjata has been presenting it to us. And it is a way to think, and using the example we just had, it's we're all in the ocean, and he's highlighting, hey, there's a way to get the land, and they do things very different. And so it's a very different way of thinking, and hopefully you will hear it, how we delve into this commentary. But thank you, Scott, for being with us. If you will, say hello to the intellectual outcast, hello to Dr. Sanjata and Langston as well, and then I'm going to read this piece. But thank you for being with us, Scott.
Absolutely. You hear me okay?
Yep, you're coming through loud and clear, brother.
Excellent. Doc, good to hear from you again, and everybody
Likewise.
Else on the panel. I appreciate you guys, the discussion that's been having had so far, and I'll see where I can jump in on this. Appreciate it, Smith.
Sounds good. All right. Speaking of my book, Reeducation of the Negro, it is short commentaries that have dialogues about what, or like what you're about to experience right now. This piece is particularly called Black Socrates Speaks, I Got Myself a Gun. It's actually dedicated to the memory of Hadia Pendleton, and you'll hear a little bit about her in this piece. I wrote this back in 2013. It is time for Black America to admit there is a negative subculture, specifically in the Black community, that breeds the daily violence we see in several urban cities around the country. It is also time for white America to realize how scarce educational opportunities are in these communities, and you can't simply voucher out the good students. If we recognize both realities, then maybe Hadia Pendleton, the 15-year-old Black girl who recently performed at the president's inauguration, would still be here. Instead, she was tragically gunned down this past week in Chicago, and her death marked the 42nd murder already this year in the president's home city. It is easy to say, let's not politicize gun control and make it about race. However, it is no secret why we didn't hear a bleep on primetime news about the 500 murders last year in Chicago until the Sandy Hook tragedy took place at the end of 2012. America continues to prove certain lives are more important than others, but everyone agrees that something must be done regardless of race. Yet, if a white legislator addresses this negative subculture in the Black community, they would do so under the fear of being called a racist. Honestly, other issues, not just gun control, have this dynamic. Therefore, most white legislators remain solid on the race issue until it is election time. Early last year, Bill O'Reilly did a special investigative report on the murders in Chicago. Unfortunately, a fair portion of the Black community tunes out anything O'Reilly says because he's already pinned with the racist label. What if, after his show, O'Reilly said, "When I was the first one in the media to discuss Chicago, not one prominent Black or Hispanic legislator stepped forward to say anything." He would be exactly right, because the fear of aligning with Bill O'Reilly would take precedence over the minority leader bringing awareness to the murders. Last month was one of the deadliest in Chicago's history, so we are unquestionably past the hour to stop labeling who is delivering the message and get the damn message. To understand what message we need to get, let's look at the entertainment in American culture. Why did a show like The Sopranos sweep up the most Emmys at the TV Awards, or my favorite, my all-time favorite, The Wire, become a cult classic in the Black community? In both of these critically acclaimed shows, the audience tuned in each week to see who would get whacked on The Sopranos and which neighborhood drug dealer Omar would rob or shoot on The Wire. With such an apparent inclination for violence, I contend it is challenging for either side to concede to have a fair and honest conversation about gun control. After Sandy Hook, TV interview host Piers Morgan called for a ban on semi-automatic weapons. He asked a member of the National Rifle Association to explain what use the American public has on these weapons. The NRA member explained that he could not protect himself with a single-action rifle if two assailants entered his home. After the show, anti-gun control advocates publicly demanded Morgan's deportation back to Great Britain for his stance against semi-automatic weapons. Regardless of what side of this issue you are on, I'm clueless how either of these solutions protects our children. I see some validity in the NRA's call for armed guards in schools, although I'm not sure how feasible it is. There are 132,000 schools in the U.S. Whether valid or not, this solution doesn't address the NRA's desire to allow the public to possess semi-automatic weapons at their leisure. I'm not saying I'm for or against gun control, but to debate this issue in absolutes gets us nowhere. In the meantime, the gun industry is sitting back, getting rich from the political rhetoric that strikes public fear. Scott is the new guest. I'll just ask you to give a thought and hearing portion of that commentary. The commentary, again, is designed not for you to agree or disagree with me as the author, but just what thoughts come in your head as I pose this question in reference to gun control. Your thoughts, King.
Well, I'll just say that the one thing that popped into my mind through that whole dialogue is what you said in the book as far as it's time to stop listening to who the message is coming from and just get the message. Because to me, that's kind of my thought on this whole deal. It doesn't matter who's saying it. If the message is correct, if it's on point, if it's factual, then we need to listen to it. And then we can, you know, once everybody is in agreement with what's being said, then you might be able to start trying to solve the issue.
That sounds good. Langston, I'll ask you, hearing, you know, again, just your thoughts in hearing that commentary, what thoughts were sparked, and then we'll go to Dr. Sanjata.
Yeah, I agree with the idea that the messenger doesn't matter. The message is important. But especially in that O'Reilly piece, I was thinking about our previous conversation about how interconnected these issues are. You can't talk about gun violence without talking about the education system, the safety of the community, jobs in the community, food insecurity. So to have a real conversation about solutions for the gun violence in Chicago, but not have honest conversation about all those other intersecting issues, for me, is to not have a real honest conversation. And so I think my only thought is, how are we contextualizing these issues and the larger system or structure that's producing these outcomes? But that was my main thought.
Nah, fair enough. Dr. Sanjata, as you see, I'm kind of going back and forth in the context. This is in a sense, typically a very two-sided issue when it comes to gun control. And as Langston just pointed out, we're typically not factoring in some of those other things that apply. And so very interested in, as you as a system thinker, that being, again, what you're here for, how do you look at this dialogue and how would you, in a sense, you approach this conversation maybe different than someone that's on one side or the other? I don't know if that's fair to ask you, but I'm very curious. Yeah, okay, cool, good. Let me just shut up and let you jump in then.
Yeah, so as I heard everything in the context you set up through the excerpt, what comes to mind for me and how I think about these things, how I've evolved to think about these things, because I'll say this, there was a point in my life where I was on one side or the other and with issues like that. Then I evolved to a place where I was more so where what Langston just described, about understanding all the interrelated and interconnected elements that lead to these outcomes. These are feedback loops. We don't live in a world of linear results of events. We live in a world of feedback loops. Something happens and it causes something else to happen. It leads back into something else happened, and et cetera. It's a circular. We live in a circular world. But now where I am is, I'm going to use a quote to kind of set it up. You never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete. So that's like a famous guiding quote for systems thinking and systems thinkers, by a gentleman by the name of Buckminster Fuller. And basically, I no longer think about fighting the existing reality. My work and my where I am in my activism and my organizing efforts is about creating a new model that makes the existing model obsolete, creating new systems where we don't have to talk about gun violence. And having a conversation about what would that look like? What elements need to be at the root of a system? And when I say a system in this context, I'm speaking very broadly. Let's say a social system, right? A social system for a community where gun violence is obsolete. That's where my mind is. So I'm not interested in having that type of argument about the things that you brought up, because those things exist in our dominant social systems because of the way they're designed. They're always going to exist. That's going to be a consistent fight, a consistent conversation because of the way our systems are designed. Violence is inherent. I'm interested in creating social realities, starting with one-to-one relationships, where we end violence and how do we do that? Relationships within our local communities, where we end violence and how do we do that? And then it will expand out into the greater society, but we have to start really small with reimagining how people interact and engage and resolve conflict. Ultimately, that's what that whole thing is about. How do we resolve conflict? So I'll stop there.
Okay, so let me ask this, and I may bring in another aspect of another cut about gun control, if you will. But let me ask this in this sense. So as I hear you say, there's a way to think where we, in a sense, don't have these conversations or we think of another system. I want to understand, in a sense, where human nature plays into, in a sense, this way that you're discussing, that there's a way to imagine, if you will, a world in which It's not even necessary to have the conversations. I'm struggling with this approach just from the standpoint of typically you see more violence throughout, if you will, human history, where there's a lack of resources or a lack of needs. And then when you see civilizations throughout history get built up, that society or did had kind of, in a sense, had those issues covered, and you see less. And then I think of prior to the pandemic, if you will, humans have evolved, as Langston mentioned earlier, and we always are evolving, if you will, but humans evolved to be less violent than in the past. That's, in a sense, how we've created population growth in this world, is because of our ability to reason. We figured out, believe it or not, how to live better amongst each other, and that's why this quote-unquote Ukraine-Russia situation is so looming, because the world had to figure out, in a sense, have figured out how to have less and less war, and people are highlighting that this war could obviously move us into something like we used to see in the 50s or the 30s and things of that nature. I'm not, and war will be amongst us because of human nature. So I'm trying to understand what does your thinking look like in reference to human nature? Any thoughts on that part? And I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just asking to understand.
Yeah, yeah. As you said, you know, human nature is always evolving. You know, our concepts around violence and, you know, our ability to reason and resolve conflict in ways outside of violence, is, we see it evolving. But, you know, different people evolve at different rates in different environments due to different variables and factors. So it's important that, like, change is emergent, it's fractal. And while there may be certain groups or populations that are evolving into something new, there's going to always be certain groups that are still living in the old. This is always going to be a constant thing. So what I'm focused on in my work and the ways I organize is being a part of the group who are practicing, experimenting with ways to live and share resources and resolve conflict in ways that don't result in violence. That doesn't mean that it's not going to happen in other groups and other places in the world and other communities, et cetera. Does that make sense?
No, yeah. That's curious. I wanted to understand. Scott, if you will, I'm going to have you jump in. If anything that you're hearing that's curious to you, and then Langston, to get your thoughts. For the callers out there, you do have to press one if you want to join us. 646-787-1691. Again, you have to press one if you would like to join. But Scott, I don't know if you heard anything that's curious to you or anything you want to bring to the table, but jump in, brother.
Yeah, I'll jump in and just kind of address a couple things. One, when we start talking about what needs to be discussed and the, you know, how things are interrelated, and, you know, one thing has a cause and effect on other things, whether it's gun control or violence, you know, in a neighborhood or whatever the case is. I think one thing that we tend to do a little too much of, at least at higher levels, is, you know, we come in, we have a discussion, and we end up stuck in neutral, basically because there is so much that goes into trying to fix any type of system that you almost don't even know where to start. And you know, and so because of that, we end up, again, like I said, stuck in neutral. And one phrase, I don't even remember who I got it from, but it's, you know, it's a silly little statement with an answer, and it's, you know, how do you eat an elephant? Well, you eat it one bite at a time. And so one of the ways that we do that within the employment that I have is we try to boil down what the actual, at least the first question that we want to answer and fix. So if that means we want to gain some type of control over firearms, then that needs to be what we focus on. But we can't necessarily focus on the education system at the same time, or the criminal aspect of firearms, you know, as well. We can't do it all at once. And then we also have to have the realization that even if we put all the rules in place to, you know, kind of like what your book said, dealing with semi-automatic weapons – even if you put down all the regulation and laws with that, you still have millions of firearms that are out and about, and you're never going to get control of all of them. So sometimes you got to take a step back and say, you know what, that ship has sailed. So let's push past that and start trying to figure out how do we make it so that the kids are good to go. Okay, maybe that's the question that we need to boil down and really focus on. Does that mean we have to put a cop in every school, even though it's, you know, over 100,000 schools in the U.S.? Mm-hmm. Now we got to deal with the funding of it, right? You know, now we got to make sure that the level of police that you put inside the schools is able to take on a burden, you know, such as that, because mm-hmm. you know what I mean. So it's, mm-hmm. it's so much, but you got to start somewhere. So, you know, so that's, you know, from what I'm hearing, you know, everybody wants to help. Everybody wants to have the discussion, or a lot of people do. I shouldn't say everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we have to think, okay, what is the one thing that we can start with and then start fixing it? And then as other problems appear, now let's prioritize them and continue. Because just like the doctor was saying, yeah, it's an evolutionary process, but damn, evolution takes a long time, okay? And so, yeah, you know, if you're looking for a utopian society where everybody is just happy and calm, I'm going to tell you what, it's going to take a long damn time to get there, and we ain't going to see it, because there are evil people out in this on this earth. All they want to do is take advantage and hurt the person that's next to them. So you got to go into it with some sense of reality and then just start.
Because
you know,
otherwise you wouldn't
start.
Have a damn job. I said, because otherwise
that's
you
right.
wouldn't have a damn
and
job.
And I tell you what, I have no worries that my job is going anywhere. I'll tell you that.
Langston, I definitely want to hear your thoughts. No, I'm sorry about that, brother. Langston, definitely want to hear your thoughts. I'm hearing Scott from his perspective saying, hey, let's take one bite of the element, of the elephant. And so – kind of your thoughts from the system level, saying let's look at all these other things to apply to an issue. He's saying, hey, from his practical standpoint, not sure that we can marry it that way. I'm not saying we can't. I want to definitely hear mm-hmm. your thoughts in this, as you've heard Dr. Sanjata and Scott speak. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, as Scott was saying, I do agree that when you're trying to figure out how to eat an elephant, you have to do it one bite at a time. And I think something that our community has gotten away from doing, and not even just our community, I think there's a wave of it across the nation. I think we don't acknowledge people's credentials or the skills that different folks can bring to the table to help us problem solve. Because they're, to answer that question of, okay, how do we even approach this issue of gun reform? Someone needs to ask, well, where did this issue begin? What's the history of this issue? Someone has to ask, well, what's currently going on? What's the current issue? Someone has to think about preventative solutions, like Scott was saying. How do we make sure the kids are okay? And someone has to think about, well, how do we stop the people right now who are popping up over the country who are just walking into school? So there are all these different dynamics, but we have, even within our Black community, experts, whether it's people who work in industry like Scott or people who are studying the history of these issues, who can come to the table and begin to bite off different chunks of that elephant. But I think Scott's last point kind of supports Dr. Sanjata's concluding point, which is that we need to figure out how to make sure the kids are okay. And in the conversation of gun reform, that's a big task, because that means that gets back to my initial point of making sure the kids okay means they have enough food to eat, means that they're in a safe learning environment where the teachers aren't attacking them. That means their parents are employed so that they can be involved in their educational experience. So to make sure the kids are okay in the gun reform conversation necessarily means that we have to have conversations about the larger system. It's almost, and this is sort of from my research background in studying structural inequality, there's no real way to develop effective solutions without having those, without bringing in those different perspectives and points of importance. And I think I'm somewhere along Dr. Sunjata's ultimate conclusion of, I don't even think about how to fix the current system anymore, because going back to the original question, our systems were designed to be harmful. I know that history very, very well because I study it, but it was built to produce harm for the majority of people and built to not allow for effective change from within side. So I agree with Dr.
Let me challenge that last thought a little bit, just from the standpoint of it's crazy because I'm kind of on, in a sense, I would say, just both sides of it from a couple of standpoints, and I'm kind of trying to still use the gun control example, through this segment, if you will. But here's what I'm saying. When you say our systems were designed to harm, and I'm just highlighting humans have been figuring out how to live better amongst each other for hundreds and hundreds and thousands of years now, and so we've learned to harm less. We've learned to harm less. Let me throw this out. So in a sense, I don't know that our system, quote unquote, is designed to harm. Now let me bring it down to gun control. And here's where I'll say agree with you and Dr. Sujata in this sense, because I do know the history of you asked a great question, Lance. You said, well, let's go into the history of it, right? So because I've studied the history of, if you will, the Second Amendment in our country, if you will, there was an aspect of arming, if you will, at the time, the current systems in a way in which they could, quote unquote, take this land and then to a degree also protect themselves from, in a sense, their enslaved Africans, if you will. So it played a big role in the Second Amendment being part and being that high within in the structure of our country. So in that sense, this is one issue where I'm like, this still kind of plays out, quote unquote, as it is designed. But specifically to gun control in our schools, I want to highlight this because I think this is something that you skipped over. And I think this, to a degree, addresses what Scott was talking about. When you say we got to make sure the kids are good and the teachers are not attacking the thing, gun control has come down to the Sandy Hook situation mentioned into our school. And this year we are having a bigger issues with outside, quote unquote, shooters coming into school. So even if we have the right teachers, even if they're fed, the gun control issue is bleeding into another area that, as you just suggested, looking at the system does not address that particular issue. I know I kind of said a lot and just put a lot of things in context. Dr. Sunjata, just kind of jump in. I'm going to ask Dr. Sunjata, if you will. I'll let you come back to you, Langston. But just kind of jump in. I'm not saying I've said anything or ask a great question. I'm just trying to give a lot of context of how it is complex. And the one thing I'll say to you, Dr. Sunjata, is while I get you are moved along and you're not having those conversations, I don't know how we get to you without those of us who are having these conversations figuring something out to get to where you are. I don't know if that makes sense, but just give me some thoughts real quick. We've got about 3 minutes before the next break.
Yeah. I appreciate you finishing it like that, because that's where I wanted to go, really all the way back to what Scott was saying, and just acknowledge that I agree. I agree with what you're saying. I agree in terms of all the complexities and why, you know, how those things need to be thought about, deeply addressed. I appreciate what Scott was saying about how, you know, there's a lot of evil in this world. There's violence. There's this, there's that. And, you know, he mentioned, you know, this whole, you know, a lot of people use the term utopia when people like me talk the way I talk. And one of the ways that I've come to hold all of these complexities is because I saw this wonderful video called How I Became a Localist by Deborah Fries. And the way that Deborah Fries explains it in terms of the fact that we all have a role, you know, we all have a role. There's four roles within the current world, where we are and where we've landed in the evolution of human societies. We all can play a role. Those of us who are conscious and aware of these things and want to do something and do our part to make things better. And for people who, you know, have a level of awareness, who understand that the current systems are harmful by design, just in terms of just, again, the way they were designed, not that it was done intentionally, but just the way they were designed based on people doing the best they could, the knowledge and resources and tools they've had at any given point in history, there's people who are now today doing what's called hospice work. And they're hospice workers. activists, police officers, armies, navies, all, you know, all these various entities, you know, nonprofits that are working towards reducing harm in the now, protecting vulnerable populations and vulnerable people in the now.
Mm-hmm.
Those people are all doing what's called hospice work. It's necessary. Thinking about those complexities that you talked about, Montoya, necessary. But we also need what's called walkouts. I'm a walkout. We need walkouts. We need people who are creating the new, who are thinking about solving problems at the root cause and creating new systems that where these current problems are obsolete. That's the work that work needs to be done as well. Some of us have the capacity maybe to have one foot in one and one foot in the other.
Mm-hmm.
And other folks like me, I only have the capacity to focus on and think about creating the new while honoring and respecting those of you who are focused on the hospice work, focused on helping people survive the current conditions. Does that make sense, Montoya?
Makes a whole bunch of sense. You know, I've always highlighted that I felt like you, I don't think you, this is my first time having a term for it, but I've always highlighted as I watched you evolve to where you are now, that you were in the walkout, and I've always understood that you were necessary and admitted that, hey, I'm trying to take care of what's happening right now in the now for the people that I can reach and the people that, if you, in a sense, that I can touch. We're all up against the break. When y'all come out of this break, I'm going to ask you guys to chop it up. So it is kind of y'all have a free-for-all just to kind of discuss after this next break. For anybody that wants to jump in, it's 646-787-1691. You do have to press 1 to let us know you want to speak. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
What happens when your customers call your business and you're too busy to answer or call them back in a timely manner? You lose that business. Shockingly, 61% of inbound calls go unanswered. But fear not. TCHmedia.ai is here to change the game. We specialize in capturing, nurturing, and converting your prospects into loyal customers. With our state-of-the-art communication solutions, no interaction will be left behind. When you miss a call, we've got you covered with automatic, engaging texts that keep your prospects connected and eager to choose you over your competitors. Don't let potential customers slip away. Make the smart choice with tchmedia.ai and skyrocket your conversions today. tchmedia.ai is here to change the game.
Systems thinking provides us with the tools necessary to make sense of it all. We could zoom in or zoom out, and at every level, the results would be the same. Relationships exist, and the behaviors of one element impact the outcomes and behaviors of every other element, either directly or indirectly. These awarenesses help me to realize that much of the dysfunction that we see in human society is a result of not honoring the interconnectivity and interdependence of these relationships in intentional ways that create balance, well-being, and happiness. It occurred to me that human systems should be designed to behave like natural systems. They should be designed so that positive balancing feedback loops are being created at every level within a given system. They should be designed so that the results or outputs of each social element produces wellness and sustains life for humans, similarly to how the waste from plants, oxygen, provides life to humans, and vice versa. Our waste when we breathe, carbon dioxide, provides life for plants. Then I began to ask myself questions. If natural systems are designed and organized in ways to sustain, regenerate, and protect itself, then why aren't all human-made systems designed with the sole purpose of sustaining, regenerating, and protecting other humans, living things, and the environment? Why do we have social systems that are designed in ways that divide us based on our differences, instead of social systems that use those differences to highlight the ways we can sustain, regenerate, and protect one another? Why do we have social systems that are designed in ways that oppress and burden one another, instead of social systems designed to truly liberate and facilitate well-being for one another?
Welcome back to the Mr. Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, is the system broken or working by design? As we listen through to Dr. Sinjata's, our special guest, audio album, Theory of Indivisibility, special guest, Langston Thomas, as well as law enforcement. Scott Waters is on the dialogue. If you guys go ahead and chop it up about what you just heard or any thoughts that y'all have, please feel free to do so. Go ahead, fellas.
Yeah, I'll jump in just real quick just to kind of jump on what the doc was talking about. In my mind, you know, what he's talking about, I've never heard of it referred to the way you did, but militarily speaking, it's strategic versus operational thinking. Right. You know, big difference between the big picture versus going door to door. I'm in complete agreement for it and for what the doc is talking about. And I think one of the main points is the fact that he would be one of the people working on a new model to make the old model obsolete. And that's a big difference between just erasing one model and trying to stick something in the as a placeholder, or, you know, like we heard for quite some time as far as the whole defund the police type thing. Well, you know, we've kind of seen that doesn't really work. You got to have the new model before you can take the old model out. And so I think that what the doc is talking about is absolutely on point, in that you need strategic minds thinking down the road, you know, decades, while you have people in what he referred to as hospice care, or, you know, like in my mind, the operational, on the operational tip of the spear type thing, which is taking care of the people that are going through it right now.
Yeah, I'd like to jump in on that as well, because I think you're right. We have to have folks thinking strategically about the long term and create a new system that makes this current one obsolete. But I think what we forget, and this is why history is important, is that we've had strategic minds throughout history come together to build alternatives that did provide that hospice care and did show signs of a new system that would make the current one obsolete. And this is why the intentionality conversation comes in and is very important, because what we don't like to discuss all the time is that this current system that we're in, or these systems that we're in, are profitable to certain people. We have for-profit prisons. We have for-profit health care institutions that make money off of having people in prison and being sick. And one example that comes to mind is the Black Panthers. But when folks have tried to build alternatives that make the current one obsolete, they get attacked for it. They have challenges from people who benefit from the existing system. And so we also have to think about how to deal with that, because like you said earlier, Scott, we live in a world where the Bible even says this, where most people are not good or are not caring about their fellow man and seek to harm them. So we have to keep the intentionality in mind, because this system was built with an intention, just like we're trying to build new systems with intentions.
Mm-hmm. Well put.
Yeah, I will. You know, I appreciate that, Langston, in terms of like how a lot of, with having these conversations, you know, that I've had over the years, one of the things that comes up is like what you said, like, what about when people try to make change in the past and they were taken out, they were killed, or, you know, they were undermined in some way? You know, I think it's important. I'll say this. I think it's important. And the way that I think about things and the way that I organize, I think about that. I look at the past for, you know, insights. It's like watching tape, you know, as if I'm a former athlete. So, you know, the coach would have us watch tape so that we don't make mistakes from the previous games and we can learn from them. Mm-hmm. So I learn from the past. I study all those past movements and I think about those things. So I just want to say that. And I find there's a concept called biomimicry. And I'll say this really quick. So like in the natural world, there's something called like monocultures versus polycultures, and like planting and crop cycles and things like that. And it's been found that the most resilient ecosystems are polycultures. What does that mean? They're extremely diverse, like in another word for that is biodiversity. So when there's biodiversity, it's harder for an ecosystem to be taken out by other, like, let's say certain like forces in nature, like a swarm of like locusts that are wanting to kill and eat all the crops, or certain nature, natural like storms and things like that. When it's like a monoculture, when it's only one particular, one kind of, you know, species of plant or flower or whatever that is in a particular area, it's easier for invading species to come and spot them and pick them off. But when they're surrounded by other diverse looking plants and crops and all these different things, it's confusing to these invading species. Their root patterns are more resilient to rainstorms and floods and things like that. So like one of the things that I think about with taking that biological example into our social systems is the idea of diversity. So one of the things that I get a lot of pushback on is the fact that you'll never hear me talking about, you know, the quote unquote black community needs to do anything. For me, in the way that I organize, I look for like-minded and like-hearted people. I look for diversity because I think diversity is more resilient. So, for example, I think it's easier to take out a quote-unquote, and this is just an example, a black power movement than it is to take out a movement of people of diverse backgrounds who are going in the same direction. So, because it's biodiverse, it's more resilient. It's you can't pick at one thing. You gotta figure out a different way. So, it's other elements that I think about to make these walkout movements more resilient against any type of threats. But I'll say this, diversity is one of those, I believe, based on the examples that nature has given, that diversity is one of those ways to be more resilient.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Oh, go ahead, Scott.
No, I was just saying absolutely. I completely agree. I completely agree.
I was going to say I agree as well, at least on the theoretical level. And even in my own work, I do work with folks who are like-minded, who align with our my principles first and foremost. But I do struggle in whether I believe sort of a black movement versus a diverse movement would be the most viable way to create healthy societies. Because when I think folks can study social movements and take away different conclusions. But from my sort of assessment of social movements, I think there's been a lot of possibility with diversity, but also a lot of harm with it too, especially in bringing it to the human realm, betrayal, loyalties to different communities. Like Muhammad Ali, I keep referencing Muhammad Ali, but he has a quote of, you know, if there's a thousand snakes, you know, trying to come into the room and one of them might not be poisonous, you know, wouldn't I just close the whole door? Like, why would I open the chance for all these other snakes to come in and bite me? And in talking about some of the isms that we're trying to fight against, my assessment is that a lot of these ideas originated in Western Europe. And so it's difficult for me to figure out or to discern how to find principled folks in different communities while also protecting ourselves from the anti-blackness of other communities that is very much evident not only in the United States, but pretty much in every region around the world.
Indeed.
I struggle with that.
Scott, did you want to speak to that before I jump back in?
No, go ahead. You can go.
Indeed. That's a, you know, anti-blackness is definitely one of the tools of oppression that exists based on our indoctrination into our dominant, you know, social systems. And for me, that's just a part of the work. You know, like that's one of the many isms or what I call tools of oppression that exist, that those people who are forging a new path have to get together and figure out how to work through. So you're absolutely correct. And for me, that's just, again, it's a part of the work. And for those of us who have the capacity to do that work, whether it's anti-blackness, whether it's working through my indoctrinated, you know, patriarchal views and sexist views, because I'm socialized as a man in this society. I'm able-bodied. I'm cishet. I'm a cisgender heterosexual man. So I've been indoctrinated and socialized to have certain discomforts for people who are transgender or people who are homosexual. I got to do all that work. And I'm looking to be in community as I forge new paths forward. I'm looking to be in community and organizing with people who are willing to do that work with me. Anti-blackness is one of many things that we need to work on together.
I agree. Yeah.
Well, I'll just jump in and just say I think that if we push anything that starts leaning towards or has any shades towards segregation because we're afraid of the poisonous snake coming in, you know, we're kind of hurting ourselves. I think that, you know, some things you got to take risk in order to get the big reward. And, you know, right now with the way society is, I personally don't feel that segregation is the way we need to go. I do think that diversity is going to bring more reward with it. And not only do you, if you start going down the safety aisle where you only allow certain folks to come in, then you omit a lot of folks that have mixed backgrounds and a mixed knowledge base to be able to help that overall cause, which is, you know, which is where we're trying to go. So,
yeah, great dialogue, y'all. I got to jump back in for this break. Yeah. Now, I really, really, really appreciate that chop it up, if you will. A lot of great thoughts said. I'll just highlight this and go into the break. And kind of to your point, Scott, and I'm not, and again, there's no right or wrong. We're just having these dialogues. And I think Dr. Shajada absolutely is acknowledging, if you will, your concern by saying, hey, that's one, some of the work that we got to do. Humans, I always keep kind of going to human evolution. Evolution always took place on the trade routes. Reason why? The intersection of ideas, people, and diversity is how we evolve to being safer than we've ever been prior to the pandemic. You just unfortunately keep using the pandemic because that natural disaster kind of changed a lot of resources and outcomes for people, and we're struggling to recover from that period 3 years ago, and we're not where we were. And I'm not highlighting that everything's A-okay. I'm just saying keep in mind we didn't reach population growth because all of our systems were designed to harm us and take us out. That happens within systems at various, like Dr. Shajada said, at various times and at various regions. Some areas, some societies figure it out sooner than others. And so it's all needed, just a challenge to all of the thoughts. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mr. Dialogue Talk Show, where all I ask is that you think.
LNG Technology Services, we are your industry leader in aircraft and heavy equipment repair services. In commercial business for over 15 years, LNG technicians have over 150 years of equipment-specific knowledge and are known industry-wide for returning worn-out, broken, and overused ground support equipment back to the user in working better than new conditions. For a service job done right at a value unparalleled in the industry, contact LNG Technology Services at 478-781-4860. Again, for a service job done right, that number is 478-781-4860. LNG Technologies is a Mental Dialogue Gold member and proud sponsor of the Mental Dialogue community.
Almost all the meaning that you will need to get you through the hard times of your life is going to be a consequence of adopting responsibility, not of rights and impulsive action, impulsive freedom. That is where you're going to find the meaning that keeps you sustained through the storms of life. That's going to be take care of yourself, you take care of your intimate partner, you take care of your damn family, you don't run off, you take care of your community, you rescue the wisdom from the past, you stand up straight, and you be courageous despite the fact that life is tragic and tainted by malevolence. Like that's ancient wisdom. That's what that is.
Welcome back to the Mental Dialogue Talk Show. I'm your host, Montoya Smith, a.k.a. Black Socrates. This morning's discussion question, is the system broken or working by design? Special guest, Dr. Shajada, as well as Langston Thomas, and I have my brother Scott Waters on the line. They just chopped it up beautifully about, if you will, this morning's discussion. That cut from Jordan Peterson just now fell in my lap this morning, and I highlighted it because I thought it was very necessary for me to bring this up from this standpoint of when we're looking at systems versus whatever issue, whatever ism, as you say. But what I hear in that cut, and why I personally think there are some aspect of what he says applies to the discussion, because I think there has to be a balancing act, or I would even offer a complete understanding of what Jordan Peterson is offering there, even in this discussion, because I can remember, Langston, when I was your age and younger, I personally got caught up in, if you will, in a sense, trying to save the world, save others, and it played a role in how I maneuvered through the world versus what Jordan Peterson is saying, navigating through hard times starts with the inner responsibility of taking care of yourself, your family, in a sense, then your community, and moving. So I'm saying I'm guilty of going community first and focusing on rights and things of that nature outside of myself without, in a sense, getting my personal foundation built first. So that's something I'm willing to admit. And I can say sometimes when you get involved in these systemic questions versus, if you will, individual responsibility, I got caught up on that end of it. And so when that cut again fell in my lap this morning, I wanted to bring that, if you will, to the table. I mentioned you, Langston, so I'll kind of let you respond, but I'm very curious in what Dr. Sanjata and Scott has to say about, you know, in a sense, bringing that to this discussion as well. I don't know if that makes sense, but I hope so. Go ahead, Langston.
I think so, to an extent. I guess I'll just speak for myself. I think we've been indoctrinated in, as a society, into, you know, this American individualism, which is a Eurocentric concept, actually, which differs from, you know, a more Afrocentric perspective of communalism, or putting the community, or valuing the community along with the individual. And so I think in my life, I've sort of been, you know, and maybe it's God's sort of mission for me, but I feel like my personal satisfaction and stability is intertwined with these larger structural questions. And so that's how I've lived my life from undergrad to working as an immigration paralegal and working as a housing advocate to pursuing a PhD and creating my own nonprofit, trying to balance being strategic, logical, and informed in my actions, working towards my personal stability, which I'm still, of course, working towards, while also not putting the individual over the collective good. And I think more of us have to try to strike that balance, again, because the context that we're in has so many incentives to focus on the individual at the expense of community. So, you know, I don't have the formula per se, but, you know, I try to strike that balance. And I think more of us need to think community first.
Right, fair enough. Let me say this and have Dr. Sanjata jump in. And so what I feel like I've come to understand, and I feel like taking a similar, to a degree, and this Langston is doing amazing work with having his own, you know, company and things of that nature. So I definitely wasn't as far as long as this young man. He's in his doctorate now. So, but in a sense, kind of similarly believing and thinking as he did when I was younger, Dr. Sanjata, what I think I've come to understand in the Peterson cut is I'm not even offering it as an either or. There's just a level of responsibility from a personal standpoint that actually is the foundation to go do for a community. And so that's something that I personally missed. I'm not saying he did, but that's something that I personally missed, did not understand, that you show your responsibility to the community by, in a sense, having your foundation in place, and then you can represent community versus getting lost in the communal thought and not having your own things in order. Again, that's something I'm willing to admit, but I'm not making it an either or. It's just being aware of what I think is the proper approach in how I hear Peterson. That's just my thoughts. Go ahead, kid. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, so I agree 100%, and I disagree and see it a little bit differently than Langston does, in the sense that I think the greatest leverage point for systems change is in terms of, for those, again, for people who are think along the lines that I do around anti-oppression, liberation, sustainability, is that we start with ourselves. That when people look at my theory of indivisibility infographic, and there's a list of tools of oppression, I always say, start with yourself. how are you wielding those tools of oppression against yourself? And then do that work of liberating yourself from the tools of oppression. And then the next step is the people in your life. Are you using tools of oppression against others in your household? Start there. Your personal relationships, the people closest to you. Like, are you oppressing them? So I take issue when I see people protesting and marching and doing all these things against violence and war, but yet they're warring with themselves and they're warring with, you know, the people in their lives. They haven't figured out a way to resolve conflict peacefully and healthily in their own relationships and within themselves. So how are we going to be a good model for society if we can't get it done in our own brain, in our own household? So for me, that's where it starts.
Now, it makes sense. And again, I know Scott, we went to school together, so I'm pretty sure some of what Dr. Sanjata is absolutely resonating just on the, based on the man I know. And also, again, me just even admitting my approach from a young man perspective is just me at this point now taking responsibility with the platform to say, hey, let me admit this so that someone else who might, in a sense, go that route, hear the, in a sense, the personal responsibility that Dr. Sanjata just talked about. So I can imagine that some of this resonates. Again, there's no right or wrong in this. It's just us dialoguing through the nuance. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in complete agreements with the doc, and to some sense with Langston as well. There definitely needs to be a balance between the person and the community, but I do feel that you have to get your own house straight first. You know, you got to get yourself straight first, and then that allows you the time that's needed, the energy that's needed for you to be able to share your knowledge and wisdom and time for the community and help straighten some of that up as well. I mean, it's a lot to be done, but if everyone were to start with their own house, then I think it almost has the effect. It has that rippling ability to fix the community as well. And then as you get through the community, now you can start affecting some of the some of the businesses, some of the government that's within your reach, and it tends to start fixing itself.
Yes.
No, sounds good. Thank all of y'all for your thoughts. Langston, if you can give me a 30-second thought, I'll let you jump in. I got to close with Dr. Sanjata. He's our special guest so that people can understand how to listen to his stuff. But if you can give me like a 30 to 45-second response, and then I'll let Dr. Sanjata close the show as our special guest. Thank you, Scott, for jumping on with us, brother. I'm going to go ahead and let you go. Appreciate you for your 3 cents this morning.
Yes, sir. Love talking with you guys.
All right, later. All right, Langston.
Peace, Scott.
30-second close, and I'm going to give it to Dr. Sanjata to close out the show so people can learn how to listen to his Theory of Invisibility album. Go ahead, brother.
Yep. I think what everyone is saying is sort of aligned with one another. I think community is as large as, you know, our state or as small as our family unit. So, you know, working to a healthy community, whether it's on the family level or beyond, I think is doing that balance of the individual and the community. So I agree with what's being said, but I appreciate the time to come and speak with everyone, and you know, conversations like this have to keep going, and so you know, I appreciate the opportunity to come and share my thoughts with you all today.
Yeah, absolutely. I forgot to highlight how can people follow your work as well. We got enough time for you to get that out. I'm sorry, I forgot to put that out there. But yeah, how can they follow your work?
People can check out my website at democraticsystems.org. They can follow me on Instagram at Democratic Systems. I'm still developing my nonprofit and our work, so things are constantly being updated, but those are two ways folks can reach out to me. Of course, on LinkedIn, Langston Thomas. I'd love to chat with folks who are thinking about similar topics.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Got a minute and a half. Get out any thoughts you want to get out and make sure they can follow you and keep up with your work. But thank you for this discussion this morning. Appreciate you, brother.
Indeed, indeed. This has been such a wonderful, discussion, dialogue. Thank you, Montoya, for the platform. Scott Langston, I appreciate y'all's thoughts and y'all's contributions to the dialogue. And all the listeners, I appreciate y'all for being here and following along, listening, and so grateful. I want to just share that folks can, if anything I shared, you know, resonates, there's a lot more. I put out a lot of content on this stuff. You can find it at my website, Dr. Sanjata. Most people pronounce it Sundiata. So if you know how Sundiata is spelled, it's just D-R SUNDIATA.com. Also on IG at DR Sunjata, as well as at Sustainable Solutions Media. Find me, Sustainable Solutions Media. If you Google that, you'll find my Substack page where I have all my content. And you can follow us on social media at Sustainable Solutions Media or at Dr. Sunjata. So I hope that a bunch of you will follow us there, subscribe to my Substack page. We're putting out content every day of the week on these different topics. And, yeah, the work continues. And I'm just grateful for all that everyone who's listening, all that you all do in your lives that is going towards these efforts. I'm grateful for you.
All I ask is that you think. See y'all next Saturday.
Peace.